Welcome to The Honest Report, a weekly podcast analyzing media coverage of the Arab Israeli conflict, anti-Semitism, and radical Islamic terrorism.
They attacked by air, land, and sea, taking Israel by surprise during a major Jewish holiday. Now, 13 and a half hours after Hamas launched its audacious assault, Israel says it's at war.
Israel is at war. We didn't want this war. It was forced upon us in the most brutal and savage way. But though Israel didn't start this war, Israel will finish it.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says when it comes to destroying Hamas, quote, nobody will stop us.
Here's your host, Rob Walker.
Israeli society has often been called one big family, where in times of crisis, all segments of society come together to pull for the common good. Since Hamas's massacres of October 7th and the subsequent months which have followed, that common mission has been on full display, despite Israeli disagreements over politics, religion, and more. As the war began 7 months ago, launched by Hamas on a Jewish holiday, Israel was in turmoil. Shock and anger soon gave way to a realization that the country was woefully unprepared to take care of its frontline defenders, specifically those soldiers fighting Hamas. One organization was soon born, Soldiers Save Lives, which worked to help equip those on the front lines even when seemingly other safety nets failed. And in this episode of the Honest Report podcast, we sit down with Ike Bodner, the organization's COO. Welcome to the Honest Report podcast. Ike, welcome to the Honest Report podcast. Ike, you, of course, are the chief operating officer and board member for Soldiers Save Lives. Tell us about this organization and your efforts that have really germinated over the last 6 months or so.
Yeah, it started with the mission to save our friend. He was hiding in a dumpster down south under attack at the Nova Festival in South Israel, turned into a supply chain management system and high-end acquisitions for, you know, private defense units of communities in Israel and of elite units within the IDF.
And so what was the need that was identified? There's certainly been a lot of stories from procurement and others on October 7th. But what is the challenge that was identified by Soldiers Save Lives? Was there a failure, or was it just recognizing that more needed to be done to prepare Israel for situations that could arise?
So that's a great question. The initial stage of this war was civilians responding, not just the army, right? Folks were down with their own weapons and their own bullets and equipment, protecting the country and ensuring our borders before the army called them up, which is a fantastic sign of resilience, strength, and ownership that the Israeli people have. Right. But when something like that happens and you need logistics to kick in, it takes some time. It's above my pay grade to go into the details or to understand fully why logistics, which is an enormous part of the IDF and part of any large institution, took so much time to respond. But we didn't wait because our friends were in the battlefield. And so when they were missing equipment, we didn't say, hey, just talk to your officer, talk to your commander. We said, great, I got you. So we went out and purchased initially up to $70,000 of our own money, just for the people that were requesting, people that we didn't know. Eventually you run out of money when you're just a couple 25-year-olds, and you start thinking bigger. And so that was where we really started to think, how can we solve this problem for everybody?
So your organization, of course, gathers donations of light tactical gear from wholesalers and in-kind donors and send them to Israel. That's certainly on the website. But help me understand a little bit in terms of why is there a need for that at all? In other words, why is there a need for this kind of augmented effort to be taking place?
So that's definitely one part of what we do at this point. The way we operate is we work with the middle. You see, in any large organization, there's the micro and the macro. And the soldiers on the field, the 21-year-olds and 19-year-olds, they have a need. They're missing something, but they don't see the whole picture. And so we work our way up to the commanders, and we actually ask them what's missing. And usually it's 90% accurate as to what we initially received as a request from the soldiers on the ground. But when they go up the supply chain many a time, and this is just basic economics, right? They're not getting the full response from the logistics officers that they're looking for. And an example of that is there's a unit, and we're not allowed to publicly name this unit at their request, but they are a forward reconnaissance unit. They deal with drones mainly, They go further into the battlefield, set up camp, and gain information sent back so that a mission could be planned. And there were 10 units within Gaza that we were privy to see, and we were able to see that three of them had drones, seven were missing. And we looked at the logs that the officers had sent all the way up the chain of command, requesting more drones, and they requested seven more, and they got three. So that took 2.5 weeks for them. And we met with them on a Tuesday, and by Thursday, we had already purchased all the drones that they needed. So it was a fraction of the time that we were able to respond with. And I think that's what we offer mostly to the IDF.
And so what is this identified in your mind, Ikey? Is this identified really a shortcoming that, okay, we have to plug some holes and this is a temporary sort of a stopgap? Or is there a long-term role for a sort of more, I don't want to say democratized, but more of a sort of a widespread civilian assistance, both in Israel and outside, to assist with Israel's defensive capability?
And so that the truth is that I think it's a fantastic question, not just for abroad, for the diaspora, but that's represented in the state of Israel itself. There's the IDF, but there are also civil defense squads for every single community at this point. And if you really look at the terrorist attacks over the course of the last 20 years, I mean, the civil defense squads have become an instrumental part of the safety and response, protecting the people of Israel. And so this might be short term. We may have to take the focus that it's better to teach a man a fish, and it's better to resolve an issue and create a sturdy supply chain that may not be entirely as active as it was within the first 2.5 months of the war, but continue to keep it open and utilize it as a tool for the future. It definitely seems to me that I think it's a responsibility of every Israeli citizen to develop their defense skills. As sad as that is, I wish I didn't have to know how to pack a go bag or have a tactical gear bag, my wife's and mine as well, under our beds, but we do. And we still live a fantastic life, but I've paid for with my own money for my wife and my wife and I to have a vest and to, you know, have all the gear we need. I think there's many heroes in Israel who were pioneers and led the way and had a fantastic example, but sadly, many of them have died in their service, protecting their community.
Now, there were a lot of shortcomings that were identified on October 7th. Least of all, we talk about procurement, we talk about response time and so on. What was it about this specific angle of it that your group, your team recognized as being needing of an organized response moving forward?
It's a great question. We're not special at all by any means. We're just a couple kids in our 20s who got a call and decided to do something about it. Our friends were going to war. They were missing equipment. It was our responsibility to serve them. And then it turned into everyone. I mean, it took me months, probably a month and a half, to respond to all the people who had somehow found my number on October 7th, 8th, and 9th. Fathers and mothers whose sons or daughters were down fighting, found my number, and just requested, begged for equipment. And we tried our best to, you know, build out everything that you need to have a full-fledged supply chain and organization, basically in 48 hours. And we didn't sleep for months. We really didn't sleep for 5 weeks, just because people said, I need this stuff. And in the chaos of war, we had to be guided a lot and blessed a lot by many people who saw what we were doing, had a lot more skill and years of experience than we did, and helped us tremendously on the intelligence front, on the verifying front, executing on the basics of just running an organization and you know, ensuring you have all your tax receipts. And those people have become family, but they've also become part of our board. They've become part of our organization. They've become our community.
Now, bring us on the ground a little bit. Help us understand, because a lot of people listening might not fully appreciate the extent to which an individual soldier is needing of equipment. What kind of equipment, sort of top to bottom, might a soldier be needing who is, for example, going into Gaza? Help us understand what they have going with them.
Well, at the moment, thank God, I mean, the supply chain has caught up, and the logistics side of the army has, I mean, seemingly, really done a fantastic job and covered everybody. There's certainly some, you know, people who have complaints, and there are individuals who love better gear, which is what we do focus on. But a soldier, you know, they do need their uniform, their boots, their knee pads, their goggles, their protective gear, their their ballistic vest and helmet, and then their army issued rifle and whatever scope, depending on what they're trained on. And certain things help advance the ability in the field. And an example is a unit of commanders that requested communication devices because they would be walking into an area under fire with tanks firing next to them, and it was incredibly hard for them to communicate. So they needed noise isolation and very high-end microphones that connected to their helmets in order to communicate with one another and, thank God, prevent friendly fire. So the IDF really has caught up. Everyone's covered as far as the basics go and what they need. But now we have the ability to be a little more entrepreneurial in spirit and advance the capabilities overall of our soldiers.
So what do you think are some of the perhaps major misunderstandings or lack of knowledge that, you know, when you're dealing, you've been doing North American tours, you're speaking to news media outlets. What are some of the biggest misunderstandings that people in North America, whether they are, members of a Jewish community or an allied group or the news media in general, what are they fundamentally not necessarily understanding the full picture of when it comes to what Israel is doing in Gaza?
What Israel is doing in Gaza, I mean, I would be humble enough to say that I'm not the right person to ask. But I will say that certain people that I serve on the civilian refugee side have a house to go back to, but their children have PTSD, and they just won't go back. And they wish they could, because the current situation is that they went from living in a home that they spent years pouring love and money into that is now a fear for them just because of where they live. And it's in the south and the north. And because of that fear, they'd rather, and their only option at the moment, is to stay in a hotel room just a couple square meters in size, have three children share a bed and in the same room as their parents, and all because they don't have the ability emotionally and spiritually to go back. And we have to take care of these people. I applaud every single soldier. I applaud the way the government is handling this, without getting too political, with the focus of freeing our hostages and taking care of our people, just like any nation should.
What do you think, David Newman, of course, the organization was founded really in his memory, if he could see what was happening in the organization taking off in his name and in his memory, what do you think he would be saying?
Lord, we ask his brothers that all the time. You know, are we making you proud? Are we doing David's memory service? We also ask if there's anything that we've done wrong that we're not doing perfectly. David knew how to just do. He was the hardest worker in the world that I'd ever known. That always made it look easy. And to him, it was never about the money. It was about people. And I just hope that we're living up to his memory and we're living with his energy. We try every day. I wake up every day and I ask David to do it again, to continue to inspire me, to continue to push me to be like him. I think we're doing a good job. And hopefully he's happy and proud.
Well, thank you, Ikey, so much for sharing your experiences with us and really your perspective and testimony on starting something so significant in such a short period of time. So thank you so much for joining us, and certainly best of luck with this effort moving forward.
And that's today's edition of the Honest Report podcast. If you haven't done so yet, please subscribe to our mailing list, our podcast channel, and follow us on social media for the most up-to-date news. If you like what you've heard, please consider a donation to support our continued efforts at www.honestreporting.ca/donate. Until next time, thank you so much for listening.